All right, our next speaker this afternoon is Sister Melek Oyelidog, also known as Sister Jackie. She is an accountant who left that field to start a family, and after six children, she redirected her focus to daycare management and worked at Peace Academy for a few years. And since 2013, she has worked as the executive director for the Soraya Ann Foundation, which she worked to found with the help of many others. Would you please welcome Sister Jackie Oyelidog.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of God, most merciful, most compassionate. I'm honored and thrilled to be here with all of you today alongside my esteemed co-panelists who braved the snow. And thank you to Peace Academy for hosting us. And thank you to everyone at OCCJ for putting so much effort into bringing us such a poignant topic for today's world. And I thank all of you for allowing me a moment to hopefully shed a little light about something that's often overlooked or even overshadowed in Islam today, its compassionate side. Yes, Islam does have a compassionate side. Now, for anyone who has sat with me for any length of time, they would know that a subject of passion and compassion in Islam may open a vast and long conversation, but out of my own sense of compassion for all of you, I will try to stay within the time limit that they've recommended. But with that said, I would be remiss without sharing a text that I sent to Cheryl Siddiqui right after I left the panel meeting for this program. In that text, I asked her, is there any irony in the fact that I'm supposed to speak about the passion of Islam, and yet I'm dressed like an extra from the Passion of the Christ? You'd understand that this was a little bit funnier because there's a backstory to it. One day while I was in the park with my daughter, a little boy of about 4 years old came over to me, and he has this eyes this big and this wonderful, adorable smile on his face. And he immediately announces as loud as he could, "Look, Mommy, it's Jesus!" His mother was mortified. But I was able to practice my compassion, so everything worked out. She apologized profusely, and I reminded her that there were far worse names one could be called other than Jesus, which is a strange thing to point out if you're a female. But I digress. Yes, indeed, Islam has a compassionate side. And this compassion should, for the Muslim, affect every decision that we make as individuals. For instance, think about the first three words that I started with. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. The root of Rahman and Rahim, of course, is the same, Rahman. Rahma, according to the Al-Murid Dictionary, has the following meanings. Mercy and compassion, pity and clemency, lenity and leniency, sympathy, gracious, and kindness. This is very important to understand because there are many normal things that a Muslim does in the day, such as eating, drinking, combing our hair, brushing our teeth, washing our hands, etc., that we begin simply by saying Bismillah, in the name of God. These are things that we do in a solitary state by ourselves, which affect only our state of mind and space. We want to make these actions blessed, so we invoked God's names on them. However, every action that is done out of passion, our passion for God, for our prophet, for our religion, should be started with the full invocation, Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. This is because we're supposed to remind our heads and our hearts that what we are about to begin must be done in accordance to and with respect for the attributes of Allah, Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim. These must be done with compassion, mercy, kindness, and graciousness. We say it if we want to read Quran. We say it when we want to pray. If we want to start our fast or break our fast, which, by the way, is when you'll hear it most loud and mostly full of compassion with a date in one hand and water in the other. If we want to donate something, as we begin certain rites in Hajj. And most certainly, if we do anything which is going to bring us into contact with other people. We say it leaving the house because we're going to deal with strangers. We say it when we return to the house because we're going to have dealings with our family members. And every dua or supplication is begun with the full invocation. This is because we must never be far away from the attribute of Rahmah. The truth is, in Islam, one cannot separate their passion from compassion without losing the essence of Islam, that being peace and submission in whatever they're trying to achieve. If one sets out with their passions on their sleeve and no compassion in their heart, then indeed they become an extremist, a topic which I'll leave for Imam Anchasi next week. Suffice it to say, though, if one is passionate about the rules or doctrine but has no compassion, then one is perceived only as judgmental. And if one is passionate about worldly status but has no compassion, then all they can ever become is oppressive. If one is passionate about social issues but lacks compassion, they risk becoming jaded, angry, and hateful, and ultimately unjust. On the other hand, if one practices so much compassion that their passion leads them to unknown directions and practices, then they open themselves up to religious criticism and may even walk the thin line of stepping out of the religion. An example of one who went this far, perhaps, is well known indeed, Jalaluddin Rumi. I once spoke on Rumi's life and writings about love and passion in a talk that lasted over 45 minutes. And after I was finished, three people came up to me and told me they never realized Rumi was even a Muslim. This is because it became hard to recognize in his compassion and his passionate fervor for Allah that the essence of any essence of religious teachings. So let me bring this back to this topic. One must always temper their passions with compassion. And their compassion must always be tempered with a passion for the principles of their respective religions. Every negative passion should be disturbed and flee in the face of compassion. And every positive passion should flourish in the face of it, if it's practiced correctly. For instance, in prayer, the Prophet Muhammad SAW tells us to pray as if you see Allah's face. In other words, be passionate. However, if a mother hears her baby cry, she's allowed to hold him or her while she's praying. Also, the imam is told to make his Friday khutbah or his sermon full of passion, even so as to make the listeners weep. But be mindful of the mothers, the elders, and the infirmed, and shorten it if any of them are present or begin to show signs of distress or discomfort. By tempering the passions with compassion, there is a protection from evil deeds and a leading to doing good deeds. This means that it is the act of always taking the high road, or what the Quran calls the path that is steep because of its direct climb. In the Surah Balad, the city, it says, "And what will explain to thee the path that is steep? It is the freeing of the bondsman, or the giving of food in a day of privation to the orphan with claims of relationship, or to the indigent down in the dust. Then will he be of those who believe and enjoin patience and enjoin deeds of kindness and compassion. Such are the companions of the right hand, the righteous." The Yusuf Ali footnote explains this ayat as meaning that charity and love will be the acid test for faith and the teaching of all virtues. The virtues which arise from love and charity are summed up under patience and compassion. Not only will they be the test by which the sincerity of their faith will be judged, they will be the fruits which their faith will constantly produce. Thus, faith loses all virtue if compassion is lost. And true faith will only be known and shown by the measure of one's compassion. If these two things are not hand in hand, then something is amiss in one's heart. On the other hand, the one who submits to his own passions is described in the Quran in the following way. See thou one who takes his God his own passion? Couldst thou be a disposer of affairs for him? Or thinkest thou that most of them listen or understand? They are only like cattle, nay, worse astray on the path. In other words, these types of people share certain traits even with animals. Yusuf Ali again writes, "The man who worships his own passions, his own impulse, his own desires, is the most hopeless to teach or guide. Reason cannot prevail over his blind passion. That person must seek to control or end that passion first within himself. No one could undertake any responsibility, for he obeys no law and follows no advice. He is worse than brute beasts, or at least they have some understanding and can be guided along a path. In this way, we can see that Islam views the relationship between passion and compassion as any other religion or society might. Islam actually makes compassion a requisite of faith. If you're not compassionate and you do not control your worldly passions, then you are the loser. And the worst of all the things you stand to lose is your faith. Now, some of you may have noticed by the bio that my scholarly discipline within the Islamic sciences and education is a bit unusual. While some may study rules or theology or history, and I indeed have studied all of these, my real love is a subject called tasawwuf, or the heart teachings. Some like to call it Sufism, but I don't like this translation, because in the West it conjures up mysticism and floating carpets. And in the East, it conjures up some other very strange and even heretical practices, neither of which fall under my study nor my religious practice. But what this does mean, though, is that I can often take things a step further and give them a more personal and spiritual meaning by focusing on the heart and the soul in order to strengthen one's faith. In other words, I look inside the heart of every person and see what others miss. I look at every person with the attribute of rahmah, compassion, mercy, kindness, and empathy. I try to find that point in the heart where passion and compassion converge and then channel the energy of passion directly towards God and being a servant to him, and then channel the energy of compassion by sending it out through all the creation through deeds of kindness and compassion, as instructed in the Balad verse. This is a constant quest to breathe love and compassion back into the heart and the soul of others so as to renew their passion for life. And by doing this, it's a hope of fulfilling the verse, and whosoever saves the life of one, it shall be as if he saved all of mankind. It's to live according to the example of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam through hadiths like the one in which he relayed the story of Jesus. One day, Jesus and the disciples happened upon a dead donkey. The disciples started to complain of the putrid stench of the carcass, to which Jesus replied, "Yes, but it has very white teeth." So under my chosen discipline, I look for the beautiful in all of creation. And I explain this now only because when choosing this discipline, my teacher laid a duty and a purpose on me that could never be limited to a particular group of people. These are the words of my teacher upon my graduation. No matter how remote a human being may be from his essential purpose, he is still honorable because he's still a human being. That he is bogged down in the swamp of sin, unaware of the highness embedded in his essence, is perhaps comparable to the black stone which is embedded in the wall of the Kaaba, falling down and becoming dirty. Should such a thing occur, it would be inconceivable for any Muslim or of conscience to remain indifferent and carry on as if nothing happened. Even when in the dirt, Muslims still would not hold back from treating that stone with respect. They would pick it up from the ground along with its dirt, clean it up with tears in their eyes, and vie with each other to replace it to the high place in which it belongs. Remembering that it originated from paradise, they would overlook its outward dirt and regard its essential worth. Yet, just like the black stone, a human being, too, is from paradise. Regardless of how fallen he becomes through sin, his essential worth remains intact. So how does such a teaching affect you in this room or in society in general? What does this mean here in Tulsa? By a show of hands, how many of you have heard of the Soraya Ann Foundation? A few? Some. A few. Well, for those who don't know, It's a foundation that was started in November of 2007 by a group of Muslim ladies and me who wanted to help other Muslim ladies, sick, homeless, mentally ill, those reentering from prison, some who had some domestic issues, as well as new converts who had been abandoned because of their conversion. By January of 2009, we had set up a fully functioning, albeit completely volunteer, organization funded almost completely by the greater Islamic community. In February of 2009, we opened our first shelter apartment, 3 bedrooms. Shortly, we expanded with 2 more rooms and then yet again with another room. We hadn't thought much about having non-Muslim clients. It wasn't that we had said no to the idea. It was that we had sort of put it on the back burner because, well, we had our plates full. Besides, it was mentioned once, there were already women's shelters. What non-Muslim would want to stay with us? Then one day the phone rang. And on the end, I hear a voice say, "Hello, my name is Rosa." For the next 30 minutes, she laid her story at my feet. She and her daughter were homeless due to family strife, and they were staying by day at the library and at night wherever they could find a place. Like I said, she talked for a half an hour and explained everything to me, at which point I asked her, quite puzzled, "I assure you, you do realize that we're a Muslim shelter, right? Are you going to be okay staying with Muslims?" After she assured me that she would not have a problem with this at all, I had to tell her the news that I really was full to capacity. But let me see what could be done, and I would call her back. I didn't want to tell her that we hadn't thought about having a Christian or any other religious denomination, and I wasn't sure about being able to make her comfortable in our shelter, since everyone is praying 5 times a day and reading Quran out loud or listening to tapes of it. Nor was I sure about being able to meet her spiritual needs, as I am not a pastor, although I have been mistaken for Jesus. I wasn't really sure what I should do. And so I went and prayed on it, and the words of the prophet, Sawasam, passed through my mind. One day, a Jewish funeral passed by the prophet and his companions as they were sitting in a certain place, and the prophet Muhammad, Sawasam, stood up as they passed. The companions asked why he had done this, as the procession was for a Jewish man, to which he answered, "He was human, wasn't he?" I could meet her human needs. Well, I immediately called the board members, explained the situation, and what I proposed to do. After moving a few people around from one place to another and bunking a couple people together, I was able to open a room for her and her daughter. Since that day, we have accepted requests for assistance from women of all faiths. Our criteria is that they must be human. We do what we can. If they can accept us, we can accept them. Last year, we helped 506 women and children in the Tulsa area. Indeed, and some of them indeed were non-Muslim. Why? Because the Muslim is called to Rahmah, not just for other Muslims, but for all of the creation of Allah, especially the part of the creation whose origination was in paradise. Compassion, kindness, empathy, these, according to Islam, are what makes us great and beautiful in the eyes of God. These are what makes us companions of the right hand, according to Balad, the Surah Balad. These are what makes us brothers of the Prophet Muhammad SAW, who is our guide and example and would pay respect to any man. These are what raises us up from being brute animals to one who is worthy of being called back to paradise from whence we came. And certainly, our passion must be for a day when we are reunited with Allah, hopefully as one about whom is said, "They saved the life of one and saved the life of all of humanity in the process." This is the compassionate side of Islam. This should be the passion of all Muslims. Thank you.